What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop.
Well, the decision has been made. King James has finally said where he is going to go next year and play basketball. He is going to sign with the Philadelphia 76ers. And this just goes to show exactly what I was saying before I went on vacation about LeBron, how he just needed to have his dick sucked for a couple of fucking weeks. And that's exactly what he got, because real talk, they've been talking about him going to the Philadelphia 76ers basically since he announced he's going to be a free agent and not re-sign with the Lakers. So that just goes to show he just needed the entire media world to just talk about LeBron for weeks on end, because where is LeBron going? And it's like, Jesus Christ, fucking finally, he has figured it out. And good move for him, by the way. I mean, he's going back to the Eastern Conference, so it makes it a little bit easier for him to win a championship. But also, the Philadelphia 76ers, they've been building a pretty solid squad. I mean, they've got Joel Embiid. They've got Tyrese Maxey. I mean, who's kind of gotten lost in the fray of all this. But Tyrese Maxey is one hell of a point guard. I think he's going to fit right in with LeBron. And then, of course, you've got Jaylen Brown, who was just traded there in the offseason. So they definitely are going to have a good-ass team and a good-ass shot at winning a championship. But I just am thrilled that we no longer have to hear about motherfucking LeBron James anymore and where he's signing. And it's about motherfucking time, because it took you long enough, dude. But that's exactly what I expected from him. He needed the red carpet rolled out for him, all the roses thrown at his feet, everybody licking his dick for a couple of weeks. And he got exactly what he wanted. And now he's going to go be a Philadelphia 76er. So finally, the decision has been made. All right, so let's move on to baseball and this crazy week of baseball. We had some good games, and one team I think finally heard me out in my top 10 power rankings this week, kind of talking shit on them the last couple of weeks. They're starting to get going now. So let's start off with Monday night. The New York Yankees played a game against the Pittsburgh Pirates. They got the win 8-5. And I was talking about Jazz Chisholm on Monday's show, and basically saying, is this going to be, because, you know, he's been hot. He's been hot for about the last month and a half now. He's been playing great baseball. He's actually been making some really game-changing plays when he's come up to bat, especially. And in this game, he had 2 home runs and 5 RBI. So I asked if he's going to keep this up throughout the second half, and so far he's keeping it up throughout the second half. I mean, 2 home runs ain't nothing to scoff at, especially against the Pirates. Then also on Monday, the Boston Red Sox took down the Baltimore Orioles 6-5, and that extended their win streak to 14 wins in a row. Durbin had a home run in the 8th inning, which was basically the game-changing home run to seal the deal for the Boston Red Sox. Contreras also had a great game. He went 3-for-4 with 2 RBI. And the Boston Red Sox continue to be the hottest team in the league so far. Then on Monday night, the Philadelphia Phillies got a win over the Los Angeles Dodgers 10-7. Trey Turner had 2 home runs in this game with 5 RBI. But on the opposite side of the ball, Mookie Betts, who has been getting hotter and hotter every single game, had 2 home runs in this one, 3 RBI. He is looking like he is back to his MVP form after his stint on the injured list. And then Monday night, the Milwaukee Brewers took down the New York Mets 8-3. Mizorowski went 4 innings, pitched with 6 strikeouts. Pratt went 3-for-4 with a home run, and Vaughn had a home run and 2 RBI in this one as well for the Milwaukee Brewers. Then on Tuesday, the Los Angeles Dodgers took down the Philadelphia Phillies 2-1, and this was a crazy pitching matchup between Robleski and Zach Wheeler. Robleski got the better of them in this one. He went 6.1 innings pitched with 7 strikeouts, and then Wheeler went 7 innings pitched with 9 strikeouts. So like I said, it was just a duel between these two guys, and whoever made the most mistakes was going to be on the losing end, and that was Wheeler. Unfortunately, Max Muncy was the game-changing home run in this one to get the Dodgers the win. Then the Tampa Bay Rays, they have been on fire for the second half of the season. You know, they kind of were clunking along there, but now they are back at it. They get a big win over the Toronto Blue Jays, 12-2. They actually had a season-high 21 hits in this game. And Fortes, I mean, it feels like every single game this Rays team has somebody new stepping it up, and Fortes was the dude in this one. He went 3-for-5 with a home run and 4 RBI.
Then also on Tuesday, the Chicago Cubs got a win over the Detroit Tigers 11-2. PCA went 2-for-2 with 2 RBI. And the Cubs actually got out to a hot start, actually, in the first inning, 6 runs in the first inning, and basically never looked back in that one. Then on Wednesday, the Kansas City Royals beat the San Francisco Giants 5-4, but that actually wasn't really what the news was in this game. As a matter of fact, the news in this game was Salvador Perez. He continues to cement his legacy as one of the greatest Kansas City Royals players of all time. He hit a home run in this one. He already passed George Brett earlier in the season for the most home runs in the Kansas City Royals home stadium. Now he has tied George Brett with 317 home runs, and he is now tied with George Brett for the most home runs ever as a Kansas City Royal. So his next home run, Salvador Perez, is the all-time leading Kansas City Royals home run hitter. How crazy is that? He's not even having that great of a season. I mean, Salvador Perez has probably been one of the most consistent players, not even just catcher, consistent players. Every single year, you know what you're going to get from Salvador Perez. Last year, he kind of spent a lot of the season injured. This year has been very up and down for him. It just kind of feels like, you know, age is starting to catch up with him. But even so, it does not matter. He is now tied with George fucking Brett. Of all players, George Brett is a legend. Not just a Kansas City Royals legend, a baseball legend. And Salvador Perez has tied him, 317 home runs. So the next one Perez hits out there, that is the... That puts him above everybody, makes him number one, and then he just keeps extending it with each and every home run. Then on Wednesday, the Atlanta Braves. This is the team that I was talking about. The Atlanta Braves are finally starting to get going. You know, they've had their huge slump. I mean, they started off the season as probably the hottest team in the league, and then they just started to slump and slump, and then they come into the All-Star break, and you're like, what are we going to get from this Braves team? And then you got the Philadelphia Phillies just right on that ass. And then finally, the Braves now have seemed to have kind of turned it around a bit. And this week are looking really solid. They got a win over the San Diego Padres, 7-6. But San Diego made it real difficult for them in the ninth inning. They actually had 5 runs in the ninth inning to kind of really put them on edge. But the Braves were able to hold on and get the win. Olsen had a huge game. Baldwin had a huge game. And Albies also had a huge game in this one for the Braves. And the Braves are now starting to get a lot of offense production out of the dudes that they really need to step up. Then on Wednesday, the Red Sox actually had a doubleheader with the Orioles because their Tuesday game ended up getting canceled due to rain. So the doubleheader moved on to Wednesday. The day game, the Red Sox got the win 6-3. That actually extended their winning streak out to 15 wins in a row. That is the longest winning streak for the Boston Red Sox in their entire history, which says a lot because the Boston Red Sox have been around 100 million years. And to break a record like that, it's a pretty big deal. Rafael had a huge game. Durbin had a huge game. And this Red Sox team just keeps on winning. But the Orioles were finally able to stop the winning streak. Later that day, they got the win over the Red Sox 5-1. Kyle Bradish pitched a gem. He went 6 innings, pitched with 4 strikeouts. And the Baltimore Orioles wanted to kind of make sure they got this win. And right out the gate in the first inning, they had 4 runs and pretty much never looked back after that. Then on Thursday, we're going to be talking about the Braves again. They got the win 6-5 over the Padres. And I was talking about Chris Sale earlier in the week. I was saying this guy is the most consistent guy on this team. He's been having a Cy Young pitching year, but he's just not getting the love because there's a couple other dudes in the National League who are pitching their minds out as well. But Chris Sale pitched a gem in this one. 6 innings pitched with 11 strikeouts. Harris also had a home run. Baldwin had a home run. Yeah, Drake Baldwin, to me, kind of looks like he's the National League Rookie of the Year at this point, unless I'm forgetting somebody offhand. But Baldwin has had a monster fucking season, especially coming off of the injured list. But Chris Sale, I'm telling you, this dude is just pitching out of his mind. And every time he is on the mound, this Braves team pretty much seems to get a win. All right, so let's turn to the NFL because training camp technically began this week. Some rookies had to report this week, and then more rookies will be reporting over the weekend and over the next couple of days and week. NFL training camp officially begins. And I was looking over the free agents who are still out there, and there's actually a few free agents who are probably going to get signed here the next couple of weeks to some teams here, because we've unfortunately already suffered an injury. The Carolina Panthers, their rookies reported, I think, a day or two ago, and already one of their rookie linebackers suffered a season-ending ACL injury, which just always sucks to hear. I mean, you know you're always going to hear dudes get injured all throughout the season, but man, when you hear that they get injured in training camp and in the preseason, I mean, at least in the preseason, they're playing some games, but in training camp, oh God, when somebody tears his ACL or his Achilles and suffers one of those season-ending injuries before the season even technically starts, oh, it just guts me. So I can imagine how those dudes feel. But, you know, with those kind of injuries coming up, and then just also some teams need to start filling their rosters. And these are some veteran players that could actually, they may not be like a captain of the team, but they're definitely going to be game changers. And so I was going to just go over a few guys that I saw. I'm like, wow, these guys are available. So I expect them to be signed over here in the next couple of weeks. One of them, to me, I thought was the most surprising is Deebo Samuel. I know the guy is very injury prone, but to me, Deebo's a beast. He's a Swiss Army knife type player. You can use him in the running game. You can use him to go deep. He got short yardage receiving skills. I mean, he's just a great receiver. And for me personally, I have no idea where any of these guys are signing. But as a Cowboys fan, Deebo Samuel has run us the fuck over. Every time we play the Niners or the Commanders last year when he was with them, I'm like, oh, Jesus, Deebo. He's going to run us over. And he always does. He always fucking does it. So if the Cowboys could sign Deebo Samuel, I'd actually kind of like that. I think he would be a good move for them too, you know. Then he wouldn't have to be the number one guy. He could be just kind of that extra weapon between CD, George Pickens, and Javonte Williams. Because, I think he would be a nice little Swiss Army knife for the Cowboys. But also at the same time, who knows what kind of money Deebo's looking for, because it's not like the dude doesn't deserve to get paid, because he most certainly does. But I was actually just shocked to see that he's still out there. And I feel like whoever goes after him, whoever signs him, you're getting a solid player. Then another guy I was looking at who's still available in free agency, wide receiver Keenan Allen. He's another injury-prone guy, but he's another really solid dude. He's a huge deep threat. And I just kind of feel like he's going to be a difference maker. Obviously, he doesn't need to be the number one guy. If he's the number two or three guy, I feel like he can absolutely excel. And that might actually extend him more into the season if he's not the number one dude. But I definitely feel like Keenan Allen's going to help out whoever ends up signing him in the end. Then turning to the defensive side of the ball, linebacker Bobby Wagner is still out there. Now, this guy, he's kind of been thrown around the league the last four seasons, but he is another solid-ass dude. You just put him in the lineup, and he brings a presence to whatever defense he's on. Once again, another injury-prone dude who's up there in years, but at the end of the day, man, Bobby Wagner's a beast, and if the Cowboys were to sign a beast like Bobby Wagner, you would not hear me complaining about it, because he is still a beast. He's great in coverage. He's one of the top all-around linebackers you're going to find. He's great in coverage. He can rush the quarterback, and he can cause turnovers as well. He's just an excellent, excellent linebacker. Another great linebacker, but who's up there in years, also injury prone, Von Miller. He's another guy who I think it can be a difference maker, but he's definitely on his last legs, if you will. But I feel like he's going to be a difference maker if he's able to stay healthy. He doesn't have to be the number one linebacker. As a matter of fact, I kind of feel like he would excel more, and you'd be able to save him from being injured and save him to last longer throughout the season if he's one of those linebackers who you're putting in and taking out, and kind of a situational linebacker, if you will, like on the third downs and fourth downs to really make the big plays. Because obviously he's not the Super Bowl MVP caliber player he once was, but he's definitely going to make a big difference on whatever defense he ends up with. And then the last guy I was looking at who's still out there is offensive tackle Taylor Decker. The Detroit Lions ended up releasing him in the offseason because he wanted a new deal with them, and they just weren't really willing to pay him. So they released him. He's still out there. My guess is he's still out there probably because he's kind of just betting on himself and hoping for the highest wager that he could get from somebody. But I mean, he's definitely a really solid offensive tackle. And I feel like whoever ends up signing him is going to be getting a dude who's not only, because these first four guys that I talked about, they're kind of at the tail end of their careers, whereas Decker is like right in the middle of his career. So you got a guy here you could probably sign to like a five-year contract, and he's probably going to last that entire five-year contract, if not longer. So this week we had a really crazy injury with a baseball player. Rookie Joshua Carota Graver. You know, he gets called up earlier in the week. His first game, he hits a home run right out of the park. And it's like, wow, game one, good start to your career. Game two, though, he ruptured his own testicle. How did he do that? Hit a foul ball, which popped right back up into his wing. And he ruptured a testicle. So he had to have immediate surgery. And it is out for a little while. And when I heard that, I'm like, damn. A, that's a fucked up injury. But B, man, what kind of fucked up injuries have we had in the league? I mean, I've seen a ton myself. But there's been quite a few. So this week's Trop 5 list, I decided to do the Trop 5 craziest sports injuries of all time. A ruptured testicle, big fucking deal. I mean, that had to have fucking hurt. But compared to this Trop 5 I'm about to rattle off on, I think he's probably cool with the ruptured testicle. But I just found that very interesting when I saw he was out. And I was like, whoa, what a way to go out. What a beginning to your career. Not going out of the park. Have a great day. Game one, game two. Holy shit, my dick hurts. I mean, whoa. But on this sports injuries list, I definitely did not do any of the guys who were paralyzed for life. I want to have, like, obviously it's not going to be like a fun list because they're all injured. It's just more about crazy injuries that we've had. But I tried to stay away from ones where people have died, of course. We don't want to talk about those injuries. I mean, there's actually one injury I read about that I actually just read about this week, and it happened like in the 1920s in baseball, where a Yankees pitcher, a great pitcher, by the way, threw a pitch, and the batter didn't see it. Ray, oh my God, I forget his name. He played for the Indians, though, the Cleveland Indians. Ray, fuck, I cannot remember his last name. But regardless, he came up to bat, and he got clocked right in the head. And apparently he got hit so hard that it sounded like the bat hit the baseball. And so the pitcher actually, like, thought the ball got hit, and he picked up the ball and threw it to first base like you normally would. But then he sees the dude on the ground. And, basically he died the next day at the hospital because his head got blown up, exploded due to that. So I kept things like that off. And then, of course, like I said, not going to keep in any of the guys who have been paralyzed or really lost their careers. There's only one guy on this list whose career actually ended. And the reason why it's on here is because it's basically like the most... It's the most talked about one. You'll know it once I mention it. Even if you're not a sports fan, you know exactly what moment I'm talking about. But I thought it would be interesting. It was honestly kind of hard to whittle it down to five, because there's been some crazy ones. I've seen in real time two in real time as I was watching it. And then one, I saw the highlight kind of immediately after it happened. And then two, obviously, I don't even think, one of them, I was just born. And then the other one, I was like 3 years old. So, that's just, I'm not going to remember those. Let's go ahead and get into the Trop 5 craziest sports injuries of all time. Beginning with number five, the Paul George leg break. So Paul George, he is still playing basketball to this day. As a matter of fact, he was part of the trade to send Jaylen Brown to the Philadelphia 76ers a couple weeks ago. So now Paul George is with the Boston Celtics, I believe. But anyways, he has been around even after this leg break. But back in 2014, he played for Team USA. and they were doing just a scrimmage. So I did not see this in real time. It was one of those things where you just saw it later. As a matter of fact, I think it happened to be watching maybe a baseball game or something, and they broke in and showed this highlight. But basically what happened is during this scrimmage, Paul George is running down the court and basically kind of gets his foot stuck underneath the backboard, the little thing that holds the backboard up at the bottom. And his leg just completely cracks right in half. And I mean, you saw it. It was boom, right in real time. Everybody knew right in real time. The players on the court, the people in the stadium, anybody watching this game knew Paul George was going to be done for a minute. Like I said, luckily this was not a career-ending thing. Could have been. You never know with these kind of injuries. But I mean, because his leg was busted the fuck up. I mean, his leg looked like a 7, the shape of a 7 at the bottom, when it should be straight up and down. So this was a crazy injury. And like I said, I didn't watch it in real time because it was just a scrimmage. So I don't even know if it was on TV at the time. But they definitely broke in on whatever game I was watching, and Paul George was out for a while, but he did have a miraculous comeback and has still managed to have a career 12 years later. Then at number 4 on my top 5 craziest sports injuries all time, I kind of feel like this is a big one. A lot of people remember this one. And that is Anderson Silva when he broke his leg. This is a UFC fighter. I was watching this one in real time. I will never fucking forget it. It was December 28th of 2013 versus Chris Weidman. You know, Anderson Silva, one of the greatest UFC fighters of all time. This was like his peak. He was on a winning streak, too. The only thing that could break Anderson's winning streak was his own motherfucking leg. And he goes to kick Chris Weidman, and I kid you not, it just snaps in half. As soon as he kicks Weidman, his leg looks like a number 7. I was like, holy shit, did that really just happen? Because in real time, it's hard to tell in real time, did I really just see his leg just whip around, completely around Chris Weidman, or did I just hallucinate that? Nah. Anderson Silva turned his leg into a number 7 and just completely obliterated his leg on Chris Weidman. But that was not the end of Anderson Silva. As a matter of fact, he's also a dude who made a miraculous comeback. Now, he would get some wins after this happened, but he was never the same Anderson Silva. As a matter of fact, this was probably, even had he had beat Chris Weidman, this was probably the beginning of the end for Anderson Silva, even though he went, I think he fought until like 2020 or 2021, around that era. So, I mean, he still fought well past that leg break, but oh my God, you could still look it up, man. I mean, actually, you can look up all of these, but Anderson Silva leg break's probably one of the easiest, most sought-after leg breaks because it was just so insane, and you literally see his leg wrap around Chris Weidman. It's insane. Then at number 3 on my top 5 craziest sports injuries of all time, this one I will never forget. I knew I was putting it in here, wasn't quite sure where it was going to end up, but it landed at 3. And that was during the Elite Eight, March 31st, 2013, the NCAA tournament, between Louisville and Duke. There was this guy named Kevin Ware who goes up to block a shot from one of the Duke players, and when he lands, his leg literally crumples beneath him. And when I say crumples, I mean like a piece of paper crumples. And I was watching this shit in real time. And I remember when it happened, I was like, did I just see what I just saw? And then you see the dude writhing around on the ground, and you're like, holy shit. Basically, his entire his leg bone popped out of his skin. And yeah, he needed to be immediately rushed off the court because his leg, his bones popping out of his skin. And miraculously, he would also still end up playing basketball after that. He would go on to, I think, play 2 more years of college basketball. He had a brief NBA stint. He never really did anything, but a brief NBA stint. Then he kind of went over to Europe to play European basketball. But shockingly, a dude whose leg, I will never forget that one. I think that's that and Dak Prescott. I almost included Dak Prescott on this one, but then when I really started to look at the injuries compared to Prescott's, Prescott's actually wasn't so bad compared to some of these other ones, even though Prescott's leg was faced a completely opposite direction. But that one and Kevin Ware are like seared in my brain because I just remember them in real time. And Kevin Ware, man, his leg just crumpled beneath him. And like I said, when I say crumpled, I mean literally like a piece of paper you crumple up is what happened to his leg. It just crumpled beneath him. And just one of the craziest injuries I've ever seen. Then at number two on my top five craziest sports injuries, I thought this was going to be number one, but it's number two. It's the only one where the guy's career ended. And it is the most talked about injury of all time. And that is the Joe Theismann leg break. I mean, it doesn't help that it happened on Monday Night Football, number one. It happened November 18th, 1985 on Monday Night Football. Also, this time, the Washington Redskins and the New York Giants, because that's who was playing at this time, heated rivalry between two division rivals, but these are two of the top teams in the league as well. I mean, this New York Giants team had the great Lawrence Taylor on it, who actually was the one who ended up breaking Joe Theismann's leg in this game. Like I said, happened on Monday night. You can literally hear the snap in his leg when his bone is popping out. And even Lawrence Taylor, the second Lawrence Taylor looks down at that leg and sees the bone popping out, he is literally jumping up and down to try and get somebody out there immediately to get Joe Theismann off of the field. Now, like I said, this did end Joe Theismann's career as a football player, but I mean, it is the most talked about injury ever. If you are not even a football fan, I guarantee you, you know what I'm talking about when we talk about Joe Theismann's broken leg. If you're not, like I said, if you're not a football fan, I guarantee you, if somebody even says the word Joe Theismann, you're going to pop up and be like, isn't that the dude who broke his leg on Monday Night Football? Yes, that is Joe Theismann. Even though it pains me to say this because I'm a Cowboys fan. So saying nice things about the Washington Redskins players, it's really difficult for me to do without vomiting, but Joe Theismann was a great quarterback. Oh my God, I said it. I was able to get it out without vomiting. I'm not going to say it again, okay? Joe Theismann did what he do. And so yeah, to see him go out like that, it sucks. But at the same time, I mean, it had to go on this list. And like I said, I feel like all of us know about that moment in time. And I almost put it at number one until I actually did research on this list. So number one on my top five craziest sports injuries of all time. It's not even just the injury. It's what happened post-injury. All right. His recovery time. All right. So I don't talk a lot of hockey on here because I've got respect for hockey. I am a San Jose Sharks fan. I was born in San Jose, so I've just always liked the Sharks, but I don't get a lot of their games out here. I used to watch them more when I lived in Reno because we got their games, but now that I live out in Austin, I get more Dallas Stars games, so I don't really see a lot of Sharks games, and so I don't pay a lot of attention to hockey, so me discussing hockey on the show is not going to really be good because I just don't really know a lot about what I'm talking about. But when I went over these injuries, cause I was not including stupid ass Olympics or soccer or wrestling or, cause there's been a lot of terrible injuries that people remember over the years, but I was not including all those stupid things because I don't care about that shit. Even though they're terrible injuries, I just don't care about that shit. But this one, I just had to include it on here. And so number one, top five craziest sports injuries, Clint Malarchuk. He was a goalie for the Buffalo Sabres on March 22nd of 1989. So he's a goalie. This is a very tight game. It's going back and forth. Buffalo Sabres versus the St. Louis Blues. Steve Tuttle of the St. Louis Blues. He kind of gets there's a scrum kind of near the goal, and him and another guy on the Sabres are battling back and forth for the puck, and Tuttle kind of gets flipped up into the air, and his skate, his sharp fucking skate, slashes Clint Mullarchuk's throat, and his carotid artery, nonetheless. And if you don't know, that's a really, 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 really bad thing. That means you can die. And immediately, as soon as he gets slashed, it is a pool of fucking blood all over the ice. And immediately, one of the trainers gets out there and he, I guess, applies pressure to the guy's throat. And he's doing it for a couple hours, too, before they're able to really get him to the hospital. So this trainer literally saved his life by just applying pressure. I guess he was, I believe he was in the military at one point. He was an ex-Vietnam vet. So he kind of knew what to do in a situation if somebody's completely bleeding out. And so he basically saved Clint Mullarchuk's life. And it's crazy to watch when just as soon as the skate slashes his throat, it's like, boom, it is literally a pool of blood everywhere. Dude gets out there, boom, they get him off there. And he ends up getting 300 stitches on his throat and returns in 10 days to play hockey again. Not only did he return to play hockey again, he returned 10 days later. I was flabbergasted when I read that because, A, I knew once, I was like, oh, he got his throat slashed. Of course I have to put that at number one. That's the craziest fucking injury I've seen it. I knew about it, but it was kind of one of those things, since I'm not a big hockey fan, I'm not really paying attention to it like I am Joe Theismann. But man, when I'm like going over famous sports injuries, I was like, yeah, that's number one for sure. But then when I read he returned 10 days later, I was like, oh, this is number one with a motherfucking bullet. So Clint Mullarchuk, yeah, that's hockey for you. Those are hockey players. They suffer an injury, they're back 5 minutes later. Even if they get their throat fucking slashed, they're back 10 days later. It is just nuts to read about that. So yeah, Clint Mullarchuk had to be number one for numerous reasons. Even though when I thought of the initial list, I'm like, oh, Joe Theismann's definitely going to be on there. And I thought he was going to be number one. Nah, it is Clint Mullarchuk, who's still alive, by the way. So that's, and like I said, he went, and not only did he return 10 days later, he would actually go on to play a few more years after that. So, I mean, crazy to think that, four out of the five guys on this list actually would go on to continue their career. So, you know, these crazy sports injuries, that's actually what I've always marveled at, to be honest. When I'm watching sports, some of these guys and girls, because, you know, we're not even just talking, you know, UFC fighters and all those other fancy little sports you guys like, soccer and softball, wee, all that crap. Even so, they do suffer terrible injuries. And when I hear, like I said, I heard the dude ruptures his testicle, I'm like, Jesus fucking Christ. And then, you know, like I said, Anderson Silva's leg completely wraps around the other dude. And you would think, oh, I'm never coming back to fight ever again. And this guy goes on to have like 12 more years of a career. Get your throat slashed. And I'm going to keep it real with you. If it's me and I get my throat slashed, I ain't going back on that ice ever again. And this guy not only went back on the ice 10 days later, he managed to keep it moving for a couple more years. So I think a lot of us, the good majority of us, could not do half of what these athletes do, especially through injury. Because even beyond the terrible injuries that I just discussed, I mean, even, like, for example, you know, when you tear your ACL these days, it's not a death sentence. It used to be back in the day, if you tear your ACL, no matter what sport you're in, it was basically a career ender. Then over the years have gone on, they've advanced in surgeries. And so now it's almost like 8 to 12 month recovery and you are immediately back after a torn ACL. So, and I don't think a lot of people understand what that's like, because if I tear my ACL, it's like a year and a half to 2 year long recovery. And that's if I'm lucky. So that's the average person. So these athletes, they're doing something that the average person can't even fathom to do. And I can't even imagine. I mean, like once they get towards the playoffs, for example, every person on the team is like bruised and battered and has some type of injury or pain that they're trying to play through. And you don't find out about it till the end of the season, till the end of their career, or even if ever, that a lot of these people and these athletes are just suffering through some crazy injuries and they come back and give it their all and are still able to excel even in many instances and cases. And it's just crazy. And for me personally, as a person who doesn't play sports, I just like to watch sports. I love sports. But one of the things I personally respect and marvel at is all you athletes who push through these crazy injuries that you get and even just risk some of the most debilitating things that you're going to suffer through after your career is over. It's just crazy. And so for me, I really respect all of y'all on some type of level simply because of the injuries and what you push through because of that. So shout out to every athlete, no matter what sport you do, even though I'm an asshole and I minimize all these crappy sports I don't care about, I still respect you. I just don't care about your sport. But I do respect all athletes on some type of level, especially when it comes to injuries and being to push through these injuries, because the average person, myself included, would never, ever, ever do half of what these people do, especially if you're suffering some type of injury like a ruptured fucking testicle, for example. All right, y'all, enjoy the weekend of sports, and I will talk to you fools on Monday.